number two on this Wednesday. It's Vic Liamorata live from the Auction Community Studios. Coming up this hour, we'll talk to Diamondbacks broadcaster Steve Berthiaume. We'll get to see Manny Machado in the division 19 times this upcoming year. We'll get into that and everything. Diamondbacks, we'll be out at Salt River Fields tomorrow for all access. Doug and Wolf out there today with Josh Colmenter sitting in on the show. We get our turn tomorrow.
I have the tentative guest list, too, if you'd like to hear. Nick Ahmed, Zach Godley, Steven Souza, and Torrey Lovello.
That's a good guest list.
It's baseball season, despite the frost on everyone's windshield.
The idea of like
I had a good time with that this morning, though. I'll tell you what, because being gone, one of my vehicles was in my driveway the whole time. So I was scraping the windshield today, which I never thought I would do, and I got a big handful of icy snow, and I just was whipping it at my 9-year-old who was stuck in the backseat. It was great. It was seriously. I haven't had that much fun in months.
I thought you were going to say something else.
Outstanding. It's definitely outstanding. Definitely. Yeah, please, none of you start complaining that it's too cold anymore, though. Okay? Please? Because I'm going to lose my mind. I know.
Because in the summertime, when we're sitting here in July,
right, you're going to be whining
talking about the Major League Baseball All-Star break, I'll be...
Just wait till you're going to be in Indianapolis next week. You know how cold you're going to be? That's going to be cold.
Yeah.
This is not cold. This is delightful. Yeah.
Yeah, the idea of sitting at a spring training game and like in the warm sun appeals to me, but it seems like a foreign concept right now.
Yeah, well, that's true.
It'll be
that's
cold tomorrow when we're at Salt River Fields, too.
That's a good point. Well, when do the games begin?
This weekend, I think. Friday, if I'm not mistaken.
That soon? Okay.
I think so. For some teams in the Cactus League.
Okay.
I think that's why we're there this week.
I haven't checked the full schedule. The Suns will resume their schedule tomorrow night as they play the... Cleveland Cavaliers starting a 3-game road trip post All-Star break. The Suns, as we have illustrated, 11-48. They have 23 games remaining on the season. I saw some people debating online whether or not the Suns can get to 20 wins. They would need to go 9-14 the rest of the way. I'm looking, Bick, and there are some winnable games against some beatable opponents on this schedule. I just don't see 9 of them.
No, either do I. Who do you see? I mean, how many Eastern Conference teams are they playing, Vinny?
Well, they're starting with 3 in a row on the road, okay?
Right.
They start at Cleveland. That's a winnable game. At Atlanta, potentially a winnable game. At Miami, could be tough. Last game of a trip. Then they come home for New Orleans, the Lakers, the Bucks, and the Knicks. The Knicks, winnable game, certainly. On the road at Portland, at Golden State. They don't play well against those teams. Home against Utah, at Houston, at New Orleans. They have Chicago coming into town, and they have Cleveland coming to town. I think the 16-66 record of the expansion Phoenix Suns in 1968-69 is in jeopardy of being matched.
All right, and so what is the significance of this anyways, though? Wondering how many games are going to win out. Is it that? Is it because this team could be the worst in franchise history? Is that...
I think that's the intrigue.
Because the individual wins really don't matter one way or the other going down the stretch. I think there's a lot of people have been slapping themselves in the head going, really? How did this happen another year in a row? And then you go, because it's the Suns, because that's what they've been and this is what they do. There's such a disconnect between what some of the players say. Like, for instance, during All-Star Weekend, DeAndre Ayton told reporters, yeah, we're building something in Phoenix, man. We're going to be great. He's been here half of a year. And he's a ebullient, good-natured dude. Then you got Devin Booker saying, we don't deserve to have an All-Star break before he goes off to his own private island. and I'm like, what is going on with this team? Who is leading this team? And where's the uniformity of message? And you know me, my frustration with this team is just it's at an all-time high. It really, really is. And I was thinking a couple of things, and I wrote a couple of things about this this morning. The city of Phoenix, they were dealing with a Suns team that haven't been in the playoffs in almost a decade. They should have demanded a couple more things for that $150 million they gave them. Number one, you're putting a statue of Jerry Colangelo outside the arena. That is our land, that's city land, you're doing it. Number two,
they're late to the party because GCU already put up their Jerry Colangelo statue.
I know that. I know that. But I think Jerry Colangelo deserves one in front of Chase Field and or Talking Stick Resort Arena or somewhere in both. I don't know how you do that. Get him straddle the street. No, that wouldn't work. That'd have to be a real big statue. You drive between the wickets and his legs. Right? Like one of those big inflatable things that you see at car dealerships.
You just announced yourself as project manager for this.
I did. That's number one. Number two, I would have had them look into this. Okay, you know what? You haven't been to the playoffs in 10 years. You can't tell us you don't want to house or stay in an arena with the Coyotes. We're going to dictate those terms. None of that happened. So the Phoenix Suns are going to continue on with all these victories off the court, and the only victories we care about, we don't get. We don't get a basketball team that's worth a damn. Now, do they have a future? Will they have stability? Will they have continuity? They need continuity. Do they have the head coach you want to stick with?
Well, I brought up the continuity point yesterday, too, when you use Philadelphia as the example. One thing that they have had, they've had high draft picks. They had a lot of losing for a stretch. They've been able to lure some veteran talent there now, but they've also kept the same head coach. Igor Kokoschkov is the fourth head coach in the playing career of Devin Booker, which has been four seasons.
Wow.
I don't think his job is in jeopardy. I think things would have to go horribly, horribly wrong over the last 23 games. And I'm not even talking from a competitive standpoint.
As opposed to what?
I'm talking about like an implosion of personalities in the locker room. Something like that would have to happen.
Right.
And I just don't think
the
signs are there. Igor Kokoschkov, though, he was on with Doug and Wolf yesterday, and he answered the question because, you know, there's the question that's looming with this team. Have they gotten used to losing? Have they gotten comfortable with losing? Devin Booker suggested such a couple weeks ago. Here was Igor Kokoschkov's answer on that.
Well, the answer is simple. You know, you don't play the game to lose. You don't show up. That's not who we are. That's hopefully, and I know our guys. We don't play well enough to win these games. That's a fact. That's not opinion, but you know, nobody's just quitting, and that's not a we don't use in our vocabulary.
Also, at this time of the year, with the bunching up of the teams at the bottom of the standings, Cleveland, the Knicks, the Suns, there's that tendency, whether it is a stated goal of the organization, there's that tendency to take your foot off the gas a little bit. Maybe not play as hard. So I think the wins are going to be few and far between.
Yeah, so do
You're
I.
right. The number is pretty immaterial. I don't think they want to make that history.
Yeah,
and tie an expansion record that has stood for 50 years as the mark of futility for your franchise, especially after you had the number one overall draft pick. But that's the reality that they're in. So I think maybe four, five, six more wins. I guess six would put them over that threshold of 17, but big deal.
Just wanted to touch on something you mentioned a few minutes ago about the 76ers as a comparison and the continuity that they had. The continuity was not really with the players, though.
No.
They sort of like did what James Jones sort of implied last week, where they picked their two best of all their draft picks, built around those guys, and got rid of everybody else. And in that model, it would be Ayton and Booker, and then everybody else, continuity-wise, might not matter.
Sure. And that might be the road that the Suns do go down. But let's not give all the credit to the organization for Philadelphia either, where they picked and choose and said, oh, this guy's intriguing, but we don't want to build around him. They missed on a ton of draft picks, too. They gave away Jahlil Okafor.
They did.
They got Jonathan Simmons for Markelle Fultz, but he didn't have a future there. Nerlens Noel was once a prized possession of that. They missed on a ton of picks, too. Some other questions around the league. One of them is about a non-playoff team right now. The Los Angeles Lakers, as play resumes post-All-Star break, the Lakers are 28-29. They are three games behind the Clippers for the eighth and final playoff spot. So now the question everybody's asking is, will the Lakers make the playoffs? Would LeBron James actually miss the playoffs?
That'd be weird, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but then you see stories like this from Joe Vardon from The Athletic. He writes, the Lakers are privately a little concerned about LeBron. Is he fully healed from the groin strain that cost him a career-worst 18 games? Is he going to pick up his intensity and propel this team back into the playoffs as he did last year in Cleveland? do you think that is legit in terms of, mm-hmm. I mean, he got a nice long rest mm-hmm. to make sure the groin was okay. Now you get the All-Star break. I think this reads as a planting of the seed. LeBron might get shut down and the Lakers won't make the playoffs, but they won't be able to pin it on him. Like, LeBron didn't carry the Lakers to the playoffs. Well, he can't do it if he's not playing.
Yeah, it could be the opposite, where the Lakers are like, okay, look, man, you've had this long layoff. Then you went and did the All-Star game. Come on, do LeBron things. Because I think part of the fear with the Lakers is, we didn't get this guy anybody. We didn't trade for Anthony Davis. We didn't bring in Paul George. We didn't get anybody for him. Is he fully there for us mentally, or is he just writing this year off? Now, it'd be hard for me to imagine an NBA postseason coming here with LeBron not being part of it, but I picked the Lakers to miss the postseason because I just thought this roster was just whack at the start of the season. And it spoke to a guy who was writing off this year in advance of either getting a guy at the trade deadline or not. You know how LeBron is. LeBron's very passive-aggressive. LeBron is going to make up his mind that if he's not been done properly, okay, then you know what? You're not going to get the best of me. I think the Lakers, they have been concerned from what I've read that he hasn't been full bore, even when healthy this year. And maybe that's a murky line, that maybe this groin injury has really affected everything, including the perception of how hard he's played. But the level of engagement of LeBron looking at his guy and just taking the ball to the basket repeatedly, he hasn't been that guy this year for whatever reason. And I don't think it's because he's slowing down, but he's missed 18 games, and that's a big chunk of time.
I mean, at some point, and we've talked about this in the past, when he would go on those monumental personal runs and carry Cleveland to success, we've seen it the last four seasons when he went back to Cleveland. The level of effort was so great, and it was hard to picture a time where he was actually going to slow down. It's completely possible that at age 34... with, you know, the nagging injuries, that the slowing down process is actually starting. He's got a lot of miles on those tires.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, considering the amount of minutes he's played in regular season games, all the playoff games, I mean, making runs to the finals 8 straight years, great accomplishment. It also equates to, like, more than an extra season of basketball on those tires.
Without a doubt.
I just think... The Anthony Davis possibility, the Lakers pressed hard for that. I think you would have seen a fully engaged LeBron James the rest of the way had that trade gone down.
Without a doubt.
Because, you know, he would have another all-star to play with, but they wouldn't have a lot of depth on that team either.
No.
And you could see the effort being increased and him carrying them to the playoffs. But then, in the grand scheme of things, with the way the Lakers constructed that roster at the beginning of the year, would it even be worth it? Is that even worth pinning on the back end of LeBron's legacy? Oh, wow, he carried the Lakers to the 8th seed and they lost in 4 games to Golden State or Denver. Would that even matter? I just think the seed's been planted for him to coast down the stretch and the Lakers to miss the playoffs. That's what I think.
I think you might be onto something, because you're right. That isn't on LeBron's shoulders. And I'm not sure LeBron likes the idea of a 1-8 matchup against, say, Golden State, and then you get summarily dispatched, and then you got to wear that. You know what I mean? I don't know if LeBron's into being embarrassed like that. So maybe this is the Lakers just kind of reeling it back in after a failed attempt at trade deadline to get Anthony Davis and just calling it a season. Yeah. I don't know. It's
part of LeBron's legacy, though, more than Jordan, more than Kobe even, is the ability to put everything on his shoulders and carry a team by himself far.
But that's not, even if he came to that conclusion and said, all right, I'm going all out for the rest of the season, you're going to see Superman, they're not going very far. There's not a lot of teams they could beat or compete with in a
but even getting to the playoffs might be considered a big accomplishment.
It might be. I don't think so. I mean, when everybody was healthy and this team was constructed, you didn't pick them to make the playoffs.
I didn't.
It was kind of a 50-50 proposition. And I don't think the West has been as tough as we expected it to
and
be
yet,
this year.
And yet, after I made that prediction, you guys kept saying, look, come on, it's LeBron James. And I thought, yeah, you know what? That's kind of stupid of me to not pick. And you know what? Had LeBron James not gotten injured, not missed 18 games, they would assuredly be in the hunt for a playoff berth.
I mean, they're not out of it now.
No, they're not. They're not. So to me, I think you guys are closer. My prediction looks good now, but it's only because LeBron's missed 18 games. So I think I was more wrong than right in that regard. But I do think that there's a lot of psychological gymnastics that go on with a LeBron James basketball team, and this is probably one of them.
It's a good way to put it.
You know what I mean? The failure to get him somebody reputable, you know, because when you look at that roster at the beginning, it's almost like LeBron brought together the Suicide Squad. I just bring that up because I watched that movie with Cole last night. It's like he purposely brought in this ragtag group of misfits as placeholders.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To be replaced. And to make the Lakers address the roster, to go replace Lance Stephenson with this guy, replace Michael Beasley with this guy. I don't know. LeBron is he's a handful.
Well,
anybody who has ever coached him, from Team USA to Cleveland to Miami, back to Cleveland to LA, will all tell you the same. No picnic. It's not.
But it's also a flawed concept. When you get LeBron James to commit to your team in free agency on a long-term deal, and he's in his 30s, he's 34 years old,
mm-hmm.
and then you basically punt roster-wise on a season,
mm-hmm.
that's just bad policy.
Yeah,
there's only so much sand left in the hourglass for LeBron James, and they squandered a lot of it this year.
Yeah, right. I completely agree with that.
So LeBron won't be the MVP this year. One of the things in the second half of the season, post-All-Star break, let's clarify, it's not the second half, it's post-All-Star break.
I've seen that a lot, and I'm like, it drives my head nuts. What? Suns are prime for a good second half. No, there's like 5 games left.
It is. It's like a quarter of the season.
Right.
But one of the things that's intriguing is the number of MVP candidates that have a chance to win this thing. I don't remember a race having this many horses still in it at this point.
It's funny you bring that up.
You have the guys in Golden State. You've got James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Giannis.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Kawhi.
Here's what I think happened. Beginning of this season.
Paul George.
Yeah. Beginning of this season, it was Kawhi and Paul George. Then James Harden just went nuts. Prolific scoring output to the point where the numbers are just mind-boggling. Giannis is getting some lift right now. Just from the way he plays, just the physical dunk on everybody way that he plays. I don't know, who would you give it to? If you, just between those two, where would you delineate between James Harden and Giannis?
I would give the nod to James Harden right now because of what he's been asked to do and what he's delivered for a team that quite honestly looked dead in the water early. People looked at what the Rockets did in the offseason and scratched their heads. Didn't make much sense.
No.
They've been hit with injuries. Paul's missed significant time. Capella's getting ready to come back, but he's missed significant time. And James Harden even talked about it over the All-Star weekend. You know, people say, is this sustainable? No, we can't win a title this way, but right now I'm doing what I need to do to help us win games. And they've elevated themselves from a team that at one point was 14th in the Western Conference. They're 5th, and they're a game out of 4th. Giannis has been amazing. They've been relatively healthy in Milwaukee all the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think the health factor does loom large in this year's discussion, at least at this point. Now, things can change between now and the end of the year in this 20-plus games. I mean, the Rockets could fall apart again trying to implement these new pieces. The Bucks could win 60 games. Things can change, but right now I'd give the edge to Harden.
Yeah.
The compelling cases to be made for Paul George, Russell Westbrook's averaging a triple-double again. Joel Embiid has been a monster in Philadelphia. Kevin Durant is always in the discussion. Steph Curry is always in the discussion.
Steph Curry's averaging almost 29 points a game, like completely under the radar.
Yeah.
Is he really?
I mean, when you achieve the greatness that he has and like what Russell Westbrook has done, 3 straight years of averaging a triple-double, it just becomes passé. Their own greatness has worked against them.
Boom. And this is what I say when you talk about what's special about Golden State. That right there, the fact that Steph Curry is averaging nearly 30 points a game and is way down the list of MVP candidates, way down the list of athletes who are getting glossed in the NBA and doesn't care. That's the kind of stuff that makes a team whole and vibrant and healthy when one guy doesn't have to have all the credit.
Except that Kevin Durant extremely cares about that stuff.
He does.
He's on the same team.
But Kevin Durant is just, he's just a mess. You know, and I think everybody knows it. Okay, let me say this. When you say that these guys are victimized by their own success, I think a lot of that applies to James Harden. That run he was on is so mind-boggling.
Still on.
It's still on. It's almost like, okay, we're numb by it now.
He's averaging 36.6 points per game.
He's averaging almost 8 full points more per game than the second-place scorer. Paul George is second right now at 28.7. He's 7.9 points ahead of that.
Yeah.
And it's going up.
It's still going up?
Well, he's been hitting for 40-plus.
That's crazy. Russell Westbrook, meanwhile, has got 11 consecutive triple-doubles. Do you remember a time when a triple-double was a celebrated accomplishment? Now he just strings them together on a nightly basis. Yeah, the league is a trip for all the hand-wringing about it. It's the collection of individual talent is just stunning.
Well, and not only that, maybe the most intriguing storyline for the remainder of this season and into the playoffs is what the Eastern Conference is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
When has there been this much intrigue about the Eastern Conference playoff picture in the NBA? It's been 20 years, probably.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, we had the roundtable show at the trade deadline, and we had 4 people in the studio, and each one of us picked a different team to come out of the East. That's cool. I'm excited about that.
Meanwhile, in Golden State, if people want to talk about chemistry and issues and things that can derail a basketball team, the word out of Golden State is Boogie Cousins has been kind of limited to like 20-plus, 24 minutes a night. So as a result, Steve Curry, he's not on the floor at the end of games. The lineup that closes out games in Golden State has not been featuring DeMarcus Cousins. And when Golden State's been really good in the past, Draymond Green is their center, and they bring in Andre Iguodala, who gives them great versatility and athleticism on both sides of the court. And that's their money lineup. DeMarcus Cousins wants to be part of their closeout lineup now. That's a great problem to have. Yeah. You know, how do you make a guy like that happy? But still, you look for reasons of what could derail Golden State, and I don't see anything. But Eastern Conference is going to be fun.
It will be fun. Spring training is here. We're giving you the chance to win VIP tickets to an upcoming Chicago Cubs game. Just head to the rewards page on arizonasports.com for complete details and your chance to win. Coming up next, we'll talk some D-back spring training. Steve Berthiaume, Diamondbacks broadcaster, will join us next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Like it weather-wise, but spring training is here. Diamondbacks open their Cactus League schedule Saturday against the Colorado Rockies at Salt River Fields. New season, new look, and here to talk about it with us, Diamondbacks broadcaster Steve Berthiaume joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Steve, how are you, man?
I'm good. I heard the Cure playing me in, so we're keeping our 80s music theme going.
Yes, one of my favorite Cure songs right there. And I'm glad you recognize that. You've impressed me with your knowledge, Steve.
Just like heaven, love song.
Pet Shop Boys.
Pet Shop Boys.
What have I done to deserve this?
I think that's the song that's playing right in Burnsy's head every day during the
it
show.
It is. That's exactly right.
What have I done?
I don't know if you heard Mike Hazen on with Doug and Wolf this morning, but he admitted he's kind of sick of having to sell the fact that there's still good players on the Arizona Diamondbacks roster after the offseason that saw Paul Goldschmidt, Patrick Corbin, A.J. Pollock leave. Do you get the feeling that that's pretty much the feeling permeating throughout the whole organization is like, hey, look at us?
Yeah, I think, Vince, that's fair. You know, it's obviously when you move a player like Paul in a market like this, it means he just meant so much to everybody here that it's going to be talked about until there's something else to talk about. And we haven't, because camp has just opened, really gotten to that point where, you know, there's a saturation level and, oh, and look over here, here's something else we could talk about now. So I think we're getting there. We're just about almost there. But yeah, this idea that because Goldie is gone, we're going to write off the season, I just think is ludicrous. There's a lot of talent on this team, and I look at a lot of other clubs around Major League Baseball just last year that, I don't want to use the word rebuild, but sort of realign things the same way that Mike is doing with his Diamondbacks club. And I look at the Tampa Bay Rays last year, who traded Evan Longoria, traded Chris Archer, and won 90 games in the American League East. I look at the Oakland A's, who had Jed Lowry hitting third all year last season and won 97 games. Look at what the Brewers did. So the idea that if you trade a marquee player, you're writing off your season, we just got to get past that.
Yeah.
And look at the players that are on this team. That, you know, they may have taken a half step back defensively in a couple of spots to take a full step forward offensively. And I think top to bottom, you know, you might not have Goldie in the lineup, but you probably almost certainly have a more consistent hitting lineup 1-8. And I think that's where we need to sort of steer the conversation.
And there's a lot to be said, too, about, all right, you say you decide to pay somebody $30 million a season versus maybe a guy who's making 10. You could take that 20 and distribute it elsewhere. And maybe that idea of sinking so much into one guy doesn't make all that much sense anymore. Speak to that in relation to Manny Machado signing with the Padres versus what Mike Hazen said this morning. Look, money is not the only reason we decided not to hang on to Paul Goldschmidt.
Dan, that's a great point, and it's not one that's talked about a lot. I mean, I think I brought this up with you guys when we spoke last month. You reach a point where, and again, with Goldie, pick a number. Is it 150? Is it 175? Is it $200 million? Who knows? We'll find out down the road. But is making a $200 million investment in a 32-year-old first baseman a smart move for any team, regardless of market size? I'm not sure that it is. Maybe you want to change the dynamic in the clubhouse, change the dynamic offensively. I think that the idea that you can take that money and invest it in a Manny Machado or a Bryce Harper at age 26, that's a whole different conversation, especially a team like the Padres, which is just trying to rebuild, reshape, retool, and generate some interest in that organization. Those are two whole different conversations. And I think the Goldie thing, there were many, many factors involved, and age is one of them. And I don't think you can overstate that. If you're going to pay Goldie, you know, $25, $30 million a year when he's 35 and 36, is that a smart investment? I'm not sure it is when you have some other young players coming up in the system who will be ready by then to play every day in the major leagues.
Steve Berthume, Diamondbacks TV play-by-play man, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. I'm sure you've thought about this. You've probably been asked this, but I haven't heard your answer. When you look at this roster as it's constructed right now, Steve, is there one or two guys that you look at and identify them as linchpins, real key pieces, maybe bounce-back guys that if this guy goes, the Diamondbacks will go? Do you have a couple of them?
Absolutely, Vince. The obvious ones are Souza and Lamb. Going back to Dan's question, okay, Goldie is gone. Now, what do we do offensively? Who's there? Well, you've got a guy in Jake Lamb who 3 years ago had 29 home runs, who 2 years ago hit 30 home runs, last year played virtually the entire season with a damaged shoulder. That's 30 home runs you're plugging back into the lineup that weren't there last year. Mm-hmm. Steven Souza Jr. 2 years ago in Tampa Bay, a pitcher's ballpark, hit 30 home runs. There's 30 home runs that you plug in you didn't have last year. So right away, if those two guys stay healthy and do what they've done before, that's a pretty big check mark in your favor offensively. So right there, those are the two big ones that come to mind right off the top. I think Ketel Marte, and the Diamondbacks identified Ketel Marte last year as a guy who was just loaded with potential, who can become a superstar in this league. He's got tremendous athleticism. He's really only begun tapping into that offensively. Power from both sides of the plate. He is a physical specimen. If he can handle moving to center field and not let that impact his continued improvement offensively, then you're looking at a true all-star caliber player in center field for the next 5-6 years down the road. Yeah. Those are my three guys offensively. I tell you, I was out there looking at bullpens the other day, and you know, I get to stand right by the six-pack there and watch guys throw. And I can tell you right now, the guy that jumped out to me pitching-wise was Ruby De La Rosa. You know, people have forgotten about Ruby.
Yeah, that's true.
Who was a starter several years ago, a 14-game winner, just had his second Tommy John, spent all of last year rehabbing. And, boy, I stood next to the mound and watched Ruby pitch the other day, and it was coming out hot. And if he can be a piece of this bullpen, if he can be your seventh, eighth inning guy at some point this year, you throw in Yoan Lopez there, you've got Archie Bradley back with a healthy fingernail, you add Greg Holland to the mix, this is a team that has the potential to have a really, really good bullpen.
What do you make of the circumstances and the weirdness surrounding Zach Greinke's late arrival to camp?
Nothing. I think Torrey was very honest with the media. And go, and when he said, look, Zach's just bored. He's bored. Spring training. And Greinke will tell you, and he said this publicly, he's one of the few guys that really does believe that spring training isn't too long. Most guys think, oh, my goodness, it goes on 6, 7, 8 weeks. Can't we cut this down? But the pitchers need that time, and Greinke has owned that. But, you know, he kind of does his own thing. While he's a terrific teammate, a lot of times when you're going through the old PFP drills and you're running through those for the millionth time, and this is, what, Zach's 15th, 16th season, something like that. I mean, can you imagine how many times he's covered first base in spring training? So yeah. I think, frankly, he just gets a little bored, and he wants to work at his own pace. And the Diamondbacks have used this formula before with Zach, and it's worked out really well. Look, this guy knows what he's doing. Let him do his thing. He guaranteed, you know, one thing, he's going to be ready for opening day. So let him. He knows what works best for him. So if he's a day or two late, yeah, maybe the optics weren't super great, but really, in the end, who cares?
Steve Berthiaume, Diamondbacks play-by-play broadcaster, our guest. Real quick before we let you go, and Dan asked you about the Machado deal, and obviously it's a big investment for San Diego. Do you think, as it stands right now, that alone could propel the Padres into contention into the West, or at least above the Diamondbacks in the standings in your mind?
No, right now, not even close.
Yeah.
They have no pitching, none. Unless Machado's going to pitch and pitch really well, that's a different thinker for them. Look, you know, it's interesting because if you look at everything that's coming out of Chicago in regard to Manny Machado, well, the White Sox reportedly had offered $30 to $35 million more than the Padres did for Manny Machado. They were up about $335 million. Now, some of that was incentive based, where the Padres' $300 million was guaranteed. Look, yeah. Here it is, 10 years, $300 million, all guaranteed, sign it. So the White Sox are a little upset about the way this went down. They were a little caught off guard. Bob Nightingale, I saw today, was saying even the Padres were caught off guard. They knew they were in it, but they had no idea they were going to get a call that said, okay, we're in, done, let's sign it, let's do the physicals. So this threw a couple of different franchises a curveball.
Yeah.
Now, San Diego, look, they need to get relevant again, and we've seen teams do this before in all sports. Teams that are kind of ignored or they're not on everybody's radar, they go out and make a big signing, and they try to get relevant again. And I think that's what the Padres are doing. They have a terrific farm system. Some of those guys are pitchers, some aren't, and there's a lot of guys coming up. But all those good players are 2 or 3 years away.
Yeah.
So you've got a team that already had a lot of dead money, San Diego, guys like Clayton Richard, and there's a whole list of players that they're paying not to be Padres this year. They have some dead money, but they've got close to 50% of their payroll tied up now in Will Myers and Eric Hosmer and Manny Machado. Yeah. They don't have a whole lot else.
Yeah.
None of them are pitchers. So San Diego, even with Machado, look, you're going to face Myers, Hosmer, Machado. You're going to have some work to do to get those guys out, don't get me wrong. But they are 2 or 3 years away from really, really contending, or I think even being 500.
Yeah. Steve, thanks so much for the time. Always appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. Enjoyed it.
See you, bud.
Steve Berthume, Diamondbacks television play-by-play man, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's Coulter Cadillac, Buick GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Dave Matthews Band is coming to Ak Chin Pavilion on September 13th, and we're giving you the chance to win tickets before they go on sale this Friday. Just head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win and complete details on the show. Coming up, we'll look at the Diamondbacks' upcoming season through a different lens. That's next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I'm kind of tired of talking about that, trying to sell that, you know, and I get it. I understand less Paul, less Corbin, less Pollock, what I'm saying. But I do think we have a lot of really good players. I hope that there are teams that really don't want to play the Arizona Diamondbacks here. That's our small goal, and hopefully that blossoms into something else. And hopefully when we come deadline time, we're buying again for the third straight year.
Mike Hazen, general manager of the Diamondbacks, on with Doug and Wolf. They had all access today at Salt River Fields. We'll get that treatment tomorrow. We'll have all kinds of Diamondbacks guests on as we invade Salt River Fields.
You mentioned something about a Les Paul.
Yeah, full admission, Bick did perk up when he heard the words Les Paul.
Oh, I did. I'm like, where's he going with this? I'm like, this is my kind of conversation.
You could tell the Diamondbacks have moved on because he said Paul and not Goldie.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very interesting baseball season because there's a lot of blind faith being thrown in the Diamondbacks, not just locally. Nationally, people are going, oh yeah, 500 team, maybe a game over, two games over. They lost Paul Goldschmidt, A.J. Pollock, and Patrick Corbin from a team that didn't even make the playoffs. From an 82-80 baseball team.
Arguably the three best players last year.
Yeah, from an 82-80 team, and yet we're all just buying into the fact that, yeah, they're going to be okay. They're going to surprise people. Really? And yet, as I've said repeatedly, there is something so hardcore and ruthless about Mike Hazen that I believe he can pull this off. And
well, that came up in the
a weird perspective to have, but I believe it.
It came up in our discussion with Steve Berthume minutes ago about the Diamondbacks, the reality of Paul Goldschmidt not being here, moving on. You heard Steve Berthume's thoughts on it. Is it smart to make a $200 million investment in a 32-year-old first baseman? Probably not. Then people look at the Padres. They're not a great team. They're not in a huge market. They're not really players, but they just spent $300 million on Manny Machado. Mike Hazen was asked this morning by Doug and Wolf, how is Machado a Padre and Goldie not a D-back?
I've never contended that the decision on Paul was strictly financial, right? Mm-hmm. That was a component of it. I've consistently said that that could have been a component of it if, in fact, we couldn't end up extending him. But that has never been, you know, the only driving factor in the trade that we made. I think when you look at a deal like that, you have to ask yourself, he's a great player. There's no doubt about it. Paul Goldschmidt's a great player. We love great players. You want to have a ton of great players. Are you one great player away from winning the World Series? We had Paul Goldschmidt last year. We didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah. Now, but keep in mind, like I said, if you believe that Mike Hazen has that much of a clue, a transcendent team-building ability, then you can have faith in the pieces that they're putting together. Do you like the idea of Ketel Marte playing center field? I think he can be good at it.
I don't think it's ideal.
I don't think it's ideal either. You think Jake Lamb playing first base is ideal? I don't.
I don't think that's ideal either.
You're putting a lot of stock into Steven Souza Jr., having
a bounce back season or a season where he can stay on the field.
That's the big thing. The health factor in all of this. Now, you know, keep in mind there's going to be assets that came over in the Goldschmidt trade that are going to make this thing interesting, but there's a confidence level to Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello that I don't think is BS. I don't think those guys are built like that, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And
you could hear the frustration. He says, I'm kind of sick of selling the fact that, hey, we still have good players.
Yeah.
And it came up with Steve Berthume as well. We won't really know until we see the team on the field. So I get the attitudes on both sides. The Diamondbacks also yesterday or 2 days ago put out on Twitter With full squad here and D-back spring fully underway, we want your thoughts on something important. Following the footsteps of hashtag our season and hashtag generation D-backs, what will your team hashtag be? Not hashtag, that's something completely different. What would your team hashtag be for 2019?
Team Dimebag.
It didn't go great, as you might expect, because a lot of Diamondbacks fans are frustrated. Some people tried to answer the call and say stuff like hashtag Desert Proud, hashtag In It to Win It, hashtag Chase the Dream. Then there was stuff on the other side. Hashtag Paying the Price for Tomas. Hashtag Cheap Owner. Hashtag No One's Left. I appreciate them putting them out there. They had to expect this, right?
Yes. How could you not? You know what I mean? How could you not?
Should I ask our listeners for a hashtag for the Bickley and Murata show?
Oh, wow. That's not going to go well either.
Now, keep in mind, the last time the Diamondbacks were in this position with Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello, where they took over a baseball team that was supposed to be the beginning of a rebuild with no expectations, they made the playoffs.
They did.
Something about expectations. We've seen it repeatedly. But you got to keep in mind, though, this division they're playing in is no joke. The Dodgers and the Giants are economic powerhouses.
Although the Giants aren't going to be very good.
I'll believe that when I see it. It's Bruce Bochy's last year.
Did you watch him last year?
Win one for Bruce. Yeah, I did watch him last year. I did.
They weren't good last year.
I also have, even though Bryce Harper seems to be eventually ending up in Philadelphia, I still have this feeling in the back of my head he's going to end up in San Francisco. And I don't know why. So whatever. I'm just saying that I like their defiance. I like their attitude. It just doesn't add up that the pieces that they have can equate to a better baseball team than last year. But they believe they can, and they believe they will.
But I will say this. That's the beauty of baseball. One of the beauties of baseball is it's possible to do it. They did lose three of their top players, but it is possible that they have the right
blend of talent. No, it is. It is.
If you lose your top three players in basketball, you're done. And everybody
That's
knows
right.
it. In baseball, there's still a science to putting the team together.
And if the three players they need to have bounce back years and be what they want to be, Souza, Lamb, and Robbie Ray, those guys could make up the three guys they lost if they're
maybe.
Good.
Yeah.
Look, everybody is missing Paul Goldschmidt, the person, very much the way people, Coyote fans, miss Shane Doan, the person. By the end of their careers, the player, you could probably get by without him. A.J. Pollock, I love the guy, can't stay healthy. Patrick Corbin, they're going to miss him. That's going to be a loss. But I got a lot of blind faith in these guys as well.
We'll see if tomorrow affects your attitude and thinking on it. We'll be out there tomorrow for All Access Day at Salt River Fields. Coming up next, the Bickley Blast. It's straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.